Well, you know, cancer is an equal opportunity enemy. It knows no gender or culture or age. And this morning's guest knows all too well how difficult a cancer diagnosis can be for a certain age. Let me introduce you to Dr. Irene Cherek, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate. Good morning and welcome, Dr. Cherek.
Good morning.
We're really glad to have you here. We've wanted to have you as a guest for quite a while now. I also want to mention to our listeners that you're board certified in hematology oncology and board certified in palliative care. And I'm going to ask listeners to think about that for a moment. We're going to come back to that. But you have a specialty in working with a certain age of patients. Tell us what that is.
So I work with newborns up until they're ready to transition to the adult world. And there is no upper age limit for that. We have patients who will transition earlier. We have patients that we're still treating who are in their 20s. And we have patients who have been treated for pediatric cancers who have late effects of their treatment that are still followed in a separate program within our division, which is the long-term follow-up program, known as the NOT program. And we have patients up to their 40s who are in that program.
40s working on pediatric cancers.
They still come see us in pediatrics. Correct.
Right, and they start coming to see you at a very early age, don't they?
Right. These are patients that we typically have treated and then they transitioned and they just have grown up with us. Mm-hmm. And there's not most of the literature that talks about the late effects of pediatric cancer treatment comes out in our literature.
It does in the
pediatric literature. So that's where the focus has always been. So we almost help them to navigate, well, this is what you need, and this is what you need, and this is what you need, and this is where you can go to get it.
Ah, very good. Well, we really this morning want to concentrate, though, on those folks who come to you when they're in their teenage years, because that seems to be a very specialized age for cancer, doesn't it?
It is. It's a different age, although it's completely within pediatrics. They still commonly get the most common malignancies that we see in the pediatric age group rather than the adult age group.
They do, but it seems to be a very special kind of an age group for acquiring cancer. I mean, you have young children, and if they start to have symptoms, start to have problems, mom and dad are right there on top of them and say, okay, we need to see somebody, and they get into the programs kind of early. But getting into their teenage years, there are some special challenges. Talk to us about what some of those special challenges are.
Well, they want to be independent.
They do.
They are often not as well hooked up into a healthcare system.
Yeah, once you're into your teenage years, you just don't get to see the doctor that often. And if I remember correctly, I think I avoided the doctor as often as I could.
They don't want to go.
Right.
And so they're a lot of times seen, if they have a problem, they may be seen by a regular doctor, or they're seen in an urgent care setting, or there's nobody really putting all the pieces of maybe all their complaints together.
Right. And what are some of the complaints? And I'm sure they're different depending on the kind of cancer they might be developing, but what are some of the common complaints?
Well, they're very different, but as in all cancers, especially in the pediatric realm, they are often what we call nonspecific symptoms.
Such as
just fever, not feeling well, a little for leukemia, aches and pains,
yeah.
Bruising,
yeah.
Back pain. Now, back pain is common in adults, but teenagers shouldn't have back pain.
No, but teenagers might have something like my knee hurts.
Exactly.
And, you know, they play on the hockey team at school. It kind of gets, it maybe not misdiagnosed, but sort of put off.
I think the adolescents themselves put it off.
Mm-hmm.
Parents put it off until it keeps going on and going on and going on. And
right.
Eventually it gets addressed. And those teenagers, there's a surge of soft tissue sarcomas and bone tumors that are diagnosed around close to our adolescent growth spurt. So a little earlier in girls, a little later in boys, but certainly in the later teenage years.
And, you know, I think back to, I have two daughters. They're young adults now. But I think back to the days when they were teenagers. And if one of them was complaining to me about those kinds of symptoms, I would have just said, hey, come on, you know, you need more sleep, or you're not eating right, or you need to get off the phone earlier in the evenings, or if you got your homework done, you wouldn't feel so bad about going to school. It would be really easy to chalk them up to something else.
It is. And they're, like I said, they're very nonspecific.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, and the interesting thing about some of the soft tissue sarcomas is that the pain can often be intermittent, which you don't think of with a malignancy. You think if it's a malignancy, the pain stays there and gets worse. Well, some of these patients have intermittent pain.
Well, now, if these kids are not complaining as they should, or we're not hearing them as they should be heard, does that also mean that their cancers are advanced by the time you see them?
A lot of times they're more advanced. Sometimes they're just more aggressive. But the average, for some of those soft tissue sarcomas, the average time from start of symptoms until diagnosis can be 4 to 6 months.
As opposed to what would that be for an adult or a child?
For a younger child, it probably would be less than that, but that's overall for those, and those diseases peak in that age group, so it's kind of hard. There's not really that literature to separate that out.
Okay, all right. And what about adults? I mean, I think we know when something is not right, and we tend to seek things out a little bit differently.
Right, and we're not skateboarding and skiing and doing all those things quite as readily. So if we are, we're choking them up to getting older or this or that, whereas the kids are younger, they shouldn't be having those complaints.
Right. And plus, I think we are exposed to the kinds of information that make us seek help a lot quicker. You know, we talk about if you feel a lump, or we talk about if your breathing is labor. You know, we talk about if you see a spot on your skin. Kids aren't hearing that. Those messages are not targeted to them.
Exactly, because it's still relatively rare for an adolescent to be diagnosed with cancer, although it happens.
Right. All right, so these kids are diagnosed finally in their teens. They come to see you, and you start treating them. Are they, and again, I'm sure it depends on what the diagnosis is, but are they spending a lot of time in the hospital?
It very much depends upon the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. They're initially, a lot of them are in the hospital.
And even when they're in the hospital, I would assume that they start at the Galisano Children's Hospital.
Correct. If they come referred to us, they are admitted to Galisano Children's Hospital regardless of their age. If they present to the emergency room up to the age of 19, they're automatically seen on the pediatric side.
They are.
And then if the emergency room finds a problem that they think is oncologic, they'll call the pediatric oncologist, because that's just – so some of it has to do with their gatekeepers and how they're entering the medical system.
I see. Okay.
So if they're entering the medical system from an adult world, they may go to an adult person. They're entering the system through an unknown world or through a pediatric center, they'll come to us.
Interesting. So a lot of their outcome can depend just on how they enter to begin with.
It can, because although there's excellent care in the adult realm, there's different kinds of care needed for different ages. One of the major victories in the cancer world has been within pediatric cancer, because we've been forced to work together. So over the last 40 years, the cure rate has gone from basically almost nothing to 80%,
which is an astounding number. I want people to understand that, and I want them to think about it. We're going to take a quick break for the news, but listeners, listen to that. From 20% 40 years ago, right, or less,
on
to 80% today, that children survive pediatric cancers. I think it's astounding, and I want to explore a little more about why that's happening. But we are going to take a quick break for the news. Please stay with us. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR. I'm here with Dr. Irene Cherik. She's an associate professor of pediatrics at Upstate, board certified in hematology, oncology, and palliative care. Dr. Cherik, as we took a break for the news, we were talking about these huge strides in pediatric cancers over the last 40 years. And you mentioned that you've been forced to work together to make that happen. And that really is different from adult oncology, isn't it?
It's very different. The malignancies in adults are common. They're not common in the pediatric age group.
Right.
So because they're not common, we work together through federally funded oncology programs that are now international research cooperative programs.
Right. That's what I was going to say, is when you say we work together, you don't mean in Central New York State. You're talking about all over the world.
I'm talking about all over the world. Australia, Ireland,
right,
Canada,
and so
here within the United States, St. Jude, Boston, we're all working together through the same research network to improve the cure rate for cancer. Because if we took the children that we had here with leukemia and tried to impart a new drug to see whether it would make a difference, our patient numbers are going to take us so much longer to get the answer to that question. Whereas if we enroll every child in this country and other countries on the same clinical trial, we get the answer very quickly and move on to the next question and the next new drug.
Well, I want to talk about clinical trials in just a minute, but I want to back up now because we were talking about teenagers, and there's something we know about teenagers, and that is that it's a huge time of their lives going through puberty, going through the emotions of being a teenager, and I've got to think that you run into challenges as well with the whole social and emotional aspects of caring for them.
We do, and I think that in some ways, of course, I'm biased, but I think we inherently, because in pediatrics, a cancer diagnosis is felt to be much more affect the whole family unit.
Yes.
We continue that thinking into the into an adolescent. So we have a marriage and family therapist on staff that's whose services are free to our families to work with any life-changing events.
Sure.
We have an educational specialist who continues to work on their school issues. We have children who were at college. Now they have to take time off. How does that affect them? How do are they going to get insured? How are they?
Or even
they
in
need
high
our social
school.
Workers.
Sure.
Exactly.
And if they're being seen by adult oncologists or in an adult hospital, then you can't make those kinds of, they're not making those kinds of arrangements, are they?
No, they're not. And we have I have a patient who I just diagnosed a month ago who's 15. He's a freshman in high school with a leukemia. He's now working through our Staying Connected program.
Nice.
So he's...
He's in school every day.
He's in school every day through a computer wherever he is, whether he's in the hospital, whether he's home.
Yep.
And then that's helping him to transition back to school.
And then wouldn't you also run into some what we call adherence problems? If the kids are in the hospital, they're getting treated because they have a staff who's right there on top of them. If they're little, mom and dad are going to make sure that if they're home, they're taking their medicine the way they need to. But what happens with teenagers?
With teenagers, they want their independence, and they may or may not be ready to have that independence. They also... Part of normal in teenage years is that nothing's going to get me down.
Yeah.
And that carries through even to malignancies.
Either that or everything's going to get me down.
But I don't. So in other words, I don't need quite all these pills that Dr. Cherek thinks I do.
That's right. I'm indestructible. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we so there are compliance issues. And I think it takes, we're much more, we have smaller numbers of patients. Mm-hmm. Where we spend more time typically with our patients. Mm-hmm. So we're much more apt to look into that whole arena.
You're going to understand their personalities a little bit better than an adult oncologist would.
Well, we try to.
Yeah, exactly. Try. Try is the key word. And even I think the parents would say that as well. All right, let's shift into this conversation about clinical trials, because I think this really has a huge impact on the kinds of care these children are receiving.
If my 18-year-old were diagnosed next week with leukemia and entered the pediatric world, we have open clinical trials through the Children's Oncology Group that he would be offered participation in.
And what are the clinical trials? Let's explain what those are and
so
why
what
that's
those
a big
are
benefit.
Are they're looking at a new way to treat a drug or incorporating a new drug into other agents to see whether or not that new drug is going to help, or see whether or not taking an old drug and administering it in a different fashion is going to improve the cure rate. And that's how those cure rates have gone from almost nothing to 80%. Is every couple of years we have the people who spend their lives thinking of these questions sit in a room and decide what's the pending question that we're going to talk about, that we're going to answer right now. We don't always have the luxury of a new drug. Sometimes it's using the same old drugs in a different fashion.
In a different way. It's a way of really accelerating the success rates, if I understand it correctly.
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
So, but that same 18-year-old, if they entered the medical system through the adult world, many adult centers do not participate in clinical trials. Mm-hmm. I think nationwide, less than 5% of adults who are diagnosed with a malignancy actually go on a clinical trial, whereas in pediatrics, that number is significantly higher. It's about 80 or 90%. I know that more than 90% of pediatric patients are treated at a center that participates in clinical trials. And therefore, if there's an open clinical trial for their disease state, they will be offered participation. And most of our patients do enroll on those clinical trials.
And does this go back to that point that you were making before about the fact that the pediatric oncologists throughout the world are cooperating with each other? It's kind of a marriage you were forced into, but you're doing quite well with it.
Right, we are.
Yeah.
So now we're benefiting those acceptance rates. And we can also tell our families that you can stay right here in Central New York and get the same treatment that you're going to get at that big name cancer center that's unfortunately 400 miles from you and 400 miles from your social network and 400 miles from your child's school. Mm-hmm. And we can network with all of those people. As a matter of fact, your specimen through the Children's Oncology Group, through the clinical research trial, may even be looked at by one of those people.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, the national expert for a kidney tumor is going to look at that tumor because they're on a clinical trial.
I want to focus a little bit on your background in palliative care. Because I have to tell you, when I first found that out, it was a little disturbing to me. It shouldn't be.
It should be
something I should understand completely, but it's not something I generally think about, children's cancers and then palliative care. But I love you have an explanation for palliative care, which is not one I've heard before. So let's talk about that.
So palliative care, most people who have heard the word palliative care before assume that palliative care is the same as hospice care. It includes end-of-life care, but it's far much more than that. So the mission of the CHOICES program, which is our newly founded pediatric palliative care program here
at Upstate. And CHOICES stands for something.
It does. We'll get back to it. We sure we can.
Okay.
CHOICES stands for something. Each of those letters stands for a different word that we felt together described palliative care to us.
Uh-huh.
So C is for compassion. H is for hope. O is for options. I is for insight. C is for compass, like to navigate.
Uh-huh.
E is for empathy, and S is for support. So there's nothing in there that says anything about dying.
No, it does not.
Some of these children, what's going to happen to them in the future is not really well known. We know that they have a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to talk about things when things are good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of the patients that we've had in the program through being able to talk about different choices that they've had along the way and knowing that they can make a choice has made they feel that they have a very much a say in their child's medical care.
Yes. When a little more control over something that's almost uncontrollable.
Completely uncontrolled.
Yes, yes.
So if we can give a little bit of control back in some fashion and assist in that way. So it's the CHOICES program is for anybody who has a life-altering event.
Mm, okay. So, and it doesn't have to be called cancer, and it doesn't have to be called death or life-threatening.
No. And so we have a lot of patients that we care for that are not dying. We do have some that do not have many options, and mm-hmm. we take care of. We actually have a huge, what we call a perinatal group that we're seeing through the perinatal center at Upstate. They're calling us when couples are diagnosed with a baby who's probably got a lot of medical challenges.
Oh yeah.
And they want to use that time to prepare. So that once that baby's born, they can spend as much time as they're given, because mm-hmm. we don't have control over that, with that baby and not dealing with the medical decisions, because we've made all of those decisions ahead of time.
Ahead of time. Isn't that wonderful? Well, I want to shift to one of the things you said, is that sometimes you don't know how much time you have. And we also talked about the fact that the cure rates, quote unquote, or at least the success rates, have skyrocketed. Now we have a whole body of adults who were never expected to live into adulthood. And now they are having to make some choices in adulthood that tie into what you're talking about. And you mentioned early on, as we first started talking, that some of these people are even into their 40s dealing with what leftovers from their pediatric cancers.
That's correct.
But you also have a wonderful story about, you tell the story. I don't want to tell it.
So I got a phone call just last week from a pediatric oncologist in Nebraska who is taking care of a young adult. He's a young man who's mm-hmm. in his later 20s, and he was treated for a pediatric soft tissue sarcoma when he was younger. And he has been followed there. He has seen him through medical school. He's graduating from medical school now.
So let's talk about that. He's graduated from medical school after going through pediatric cancer.
That's correct. He's mm-hmm. graduating from medical school. He is pursuing a career in surgery, and the reason why I got the phone call was because he's going to start his residency here in surgery in July, and he needs to get hooked up into the cancer world. And he has a lot of the challenges that a lot of the young adults in our country have. He has not gotten great care recently while he's been in school because he doesn't have good health insurance.
Ah.
He knows when he gets here, he's going to have good health insurance. So mm-hmm. the question from this physician in Nebraska was, where does he go? And mm-hmm. I said, it doesn't matter what his age is. He can come into our long-term follow-up program. Our kids now off therapy program and get completely hooked up with all of those and get all that testing that he needs done and surveillance that he needs done that needs to be a little bit different because of his history.
Yes. But I think what is absolutely wonderful is he is going to become a doctor who really gets what it's like to be a patient. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And listeners, we are going to take a break now. Please do stay with us. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.